The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
European Parliament MEPs were called last week to vote on a resolution entitled Russia's Escalation of Its War of Aggression Against Ukraine. It contained 25 paragraphs in total. The resolution passed with 500 votes in favour, 26 votes against and 36 abstentions. Notably, MEPs Mick Wallace and Claire Daly voted against the overall motion and in particular paragraph 5, which calls for massively increasing military assistance. However, the two Irish MEPs did vote in favour of a number of paragraphs. I'm joined from Brussels by Member of the European Parliament for the constituency of Dublin, Claire Daly herself. Claire, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, why did you vote against this particular motion?
Well, I suppose the first thing to say is that it wasn't a motion to condemn the Russian escalation in the war, and the parts in it which did condemn Russia's activity, we very strongly voted for those sections. But these Parliament motions contain 25 paragraphs, each of them equally weighted. As I say, we condemned the annexation, we supported calls for peace, but we couldn't vote for the motion overall because it called for more military weapons going into Ukraine, it called for more sanctions, which as far as I'm concerned is collective punishment, and it called on hesitant countries to be militarily active in supporting Ukraine, which to me means compromising our neutrality. It had a lot of escalatory language and so on. So, as I say, while supporting the bits which condemned Russia's action, we couldn't support a strategy which, in essence, is looking for a continuation of the war. These are the tactics that have been employed for the past 8 months and they haven't worked.
So, your reservations, which you've articulated before, against sanctions, first of all, of course they impact on European countries, but they should massively impact on Russia, which is the idea.
They haven't, though. I mean, we've had a situation where the Russian current account is at record surplus levels. The restrictions on oil and gas have resulted in Russia getting a market elsewhere at massively inflated prices, which means they are sitting on huge amounts of cash at the moment. Undoubtedly, they can't get some parts and so on. But the countries which contain the majority of the world's population continue to trade and do business with Russia. And I suppose in that sense, they've done okay out of it. I'm not saying it hasn't had an impact. I'm sure it's had some, but not nearly as much as the devastating impact on the economies of Europe in particular.
But the point is, do you continue to do business with this man? So even if you have to take some privation yourself, rather than do business with someone who is clearly a dictator, someone who does not respect other people's territorial boundaries, why would you want to do business with this man?
But that all sounds very noble, but it's not actually the reality. I mean, we have a funny situation now where precisely because of the reasoning you've given there that Putin's a dictator, this is a terrible war, both of which are true. But now, because we need other oil and gas, we're going to do business with Qatar, which is also an authoritarian regime, also involved in a horrible war in Yemen and about to launch the World Cup where thousands of migrant workers have died. So this is a nonsense. We are doing business with Russia now. We can't distance and divorce the economy from that. I mean, arrangements have been made whereby there is goods going out. Obviously, they've managed to negotiate the grain situation, but there's also movement in agricultural products and fertilizer and so on from Russia, because it doesn't make any sense to cut our nose. And it's not helping Ukraine. That's the key thing. How is this helping Ukraine in any way? It hasn't saved a single life. Thousands have died, millions displaced. The country is absolutely devastated. And we're going in doing over and over again the same thing and expecting a different result.
Okay, but the alternative is to roll over. When someone like Putin it decides to invade Ukraine, and who knows what's next, Lithuania, Latvia, Finland, they earlier in the 20th century, they took a Finnish city, which still remains in Russian territory. I mean, this is what Russia is doing. You give an inch,
well,
they will take
now, Pat, because I don't think Putin was there then at that time. But no, I mean, look, it doesn't mean roll over at all. this isn't the first war, sadly. It's not the only war going on in the world at the moment. And what the international law and the international community normally does in these situations, it has a responsibility to de-escalate, to intervene collectively, to point a way forward in terms of dialogue and negotiations. That's what the UN Charter is. Now, the Russians absolutely breached the UN Charter when they illegally invaded the territory of Ukraine. I've said that. I voted for motions which say that. But the response of the international community has to try and end that. And the tactics they've employed so far haven't worked. So I think what would be far better is the proposal which is on the table at the moment, and fair play to Mexico for tabling it, for dialogue and peace. And 66 countries, a majority of the world's population, have supported that call. And I actually think it's shameful that Ireland hasn't joined that call. I mean, we saw over the weekend, again, massive protests in France, in the Czech Republic, all demanding an end to the war, an end to NATO escalation and so on, and pointing a way for peace. It's a position that the Pope has outlined since the beginning, Sabrina Higgins. It's something we've outlined. That's not rolling over. Peace isn't easy, but we have a duty to explore it. And we in Ireland, more than anybody, should know that. I mean, we've had our own troubled history with a big neighbour. And the international community helped us deliver peace. And fair play to the US that time, they played a positive role. I don't think we would have had the peace agreement without that. But the international community needs to do it in this. And they haven't done
it. But if you take that analogy, Claire, and the reasons that the Provisional IRA would have given for the troubles over the 30 years would have been to get the Brits out of Northern Ireland, if you take the analogy to its logical conclusion, 30 years of war left the situation pretty much as it was before with the Brits in Northern Ireland. So nothing was gained territorially. There was a lot of political gain indeed. But what you'd be left with is Russia occupying huge parts of Ukraine and a peace deal that the international community stood over, like the Americans and the EU stood over the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, that would be absolutely lunacy, and it wouldn't be a peace deal then, would it? Because that is clearly against the wishes of the people of Ukraine. So that couldn't possibly be a negotiated peace settlement. I mean, it's interesting to note that they were at the table three times already in this war, and it hasn't got the prominence in the West that it deserves. But what was spoken about was the idea of Ukrainian neutrality in return for security guarantees. And of course, the quid pro quo on that is that Russia has to leave. I mean, what we need to be doing is building to a situation where there is a confidence building, a lowering of tensions, a ceasefire, obviously, to allow dialogue. And then part of that dialogue is going to be, have to be, a Russian withdrawal. Now, I voted for motions in support of that, but that isn't enough. Me saying it, or the EU saying, oh, Russia should withdraw, and that's all it is, the war will end. They're not going to get out based at the moment. The only thing that could possibly, if you like, accommodate them in that is a peace and a negotiated agreement, because the road we're on now of military escalation is only resulting in more military escalation.
But isn't that what the Ukrainians need, is some sort of military, if not victory, a stalemate that allows, if you like, an equality at the negotiating table? If you allow the bully to determine what happens, well, then at the negotiating table, the bully will have all the cards.
What you're actually looking for, Pat, is for Ukraine to continue on fighting Russia to the last Ukrainian. That's the way it kind of smacks to me. I mean, sadly, nobody is winning in this. And if you like, the Ukrainians have proved heroically that their country is not for the taking. And everybody knows that is. And they fought valiantly. But the war is going on. And the response now is an escalation from Russia. They're mobilizing 300,000 troops. They could possibly mobilize an awful lot more. They're rattling the nuclear saber, which, according to their rules, is if they lose by conventional means, they would resort to that, which to me is utterly frightening. So nobody is going to win out of that. And I don't think that it's acceptable that Ukrainians should be sacrificed in that goal. What we need is the international community to get behind them all and say enough. But sadly, in the times that it was pried before, the US and NATO basically said no to the previous peace agreement.
So are you concerned at all that yours might come across as a voice of appeasement? Do you know that the Russians will use your vote and say, well, at least, you know, an Irish MEP is on our side?
No, I think in the powerless European Parliament of 700 people, when the whole of the US and NATO are kind of on the other side, I don't think one Irish MEP's voice is going to make a difference than that. But what I will tell you is that every single day I get correspondence from people all over Europe. As I said, there were tens of thousands of people on the streets all over the weekend against this war. It's an international law-based, civilized approach to try and deal with the conflict, which has been mentioned in every other war, if you like, as well. The idea of peace, why would this be different? And that's not to say it's appeasement or it's easy. And I'm aware that it's been presented like that. But my concern for it is not that, oh, I'm worried or I want the Russians to win or blah, blah, blah. I'm deeply worried at where this war is going. I'm deeply worried at the consequences it's having on Ukraine, which has been pummeled and which could be, as Hillary Clinton said at the start, this could be Russia's Afghanistan. And she seemed to take great pleasure out of that. But I deal with Afghans every day as well who are still feeling the consequence of the war in Afghanistan. So I want this war stopped. So we need to
People would think that you're being naive, because suppose there is a peace talk and some sort of a peace. Putin is president for life if he so chooses, another 15 years of him, maybe. He licks his wounds, he gets ready, he doesn't make the same mistakes twice, and he goes again. That's, in 10 years' time, he goes again.
Well, if he does, and if he's still around then, well, obviously the basis of the agreement that is reached is going to have to take into account Ukraine's security concerns. And this is why the proposal that actually the Ukrainians put on the table in March as a peace proposal was permanent neutrality, no military bases or alliances, in exchange for a security guarantee, which Ukraine is entitled to, which will be secured by all, including Russia, and that their entry to the EU would be facilitated. Now, I find it shocking that this deal, if you like, didn't get the attention it deserved, but all quarters were looking at that in March. It was essentially scuppered at that time by the US, but I think it needs to be returned to. And I'm very glad that Mexico did use its position on the UN Security Council last month to put forward such a proposal for dialogue.
Yeah, but do you actually...
That's the way forward.
Do you believe...
This isn't some fringe lunatic idea. This is mainstream UN international law-based resolution of conflict.
Do you actually even trust the Russians? I mean, telling us they weren't going to invade, the next day they invade, the war crimes that have been documented in Bucha originally, close to Kyiv, and then in Izium laterally, and indeed everywhere that has been liberated by Ukrainians in recent days, they are finding mass graves or the graves of civilians whose death is inexplicable.
And there's also accounts of Ukrainian atrocities, and that's why I'm an anti-war activist all my life, because there's no such thing as a nice war. All sides commit atrocities in a conflict. It's horror without end, and women and children suffer most, and that's why we have a responsibility to intervene in the situation. Do I trust Russia? Well, interestingly, in the course of this war, there have been internationally brokered agreements which have been honoured and respected in terms of humanitarian issues, in terms of getting the grain out, and in terms of getting a market for agricultural and fertilizer products out of Russia, which are needed for the world economy. So they have been deals brokered.
You actually trust,
these
people?
Honored those agreements, and they have been...
They've honored any agreement that has been self-serving. When they honoured, finally, after the Mariupol siege, they finally allowed people out. We know what happened to them. They were taken to Russia. Some were subject to torture. What are we talking about here?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Pat, and I don't know what your way forward is on this situation, because this idea, oh, you can't trust Russia. Well, then, what are you saying? Let's fight to the death and to the last Ukrainian. And that's the way forward, because that's an unacceptable way forward.
But I'm not suggesting a personal view, but
the
alternative view would be to demonstrate to Russia, as the British discovered in Northern Ireland, that they're in an unwinnable war. And then people come to the table when they're in an unwinnable war.
Sadly, that is absolutely naive, because it's not winnable by anybody. And I don't think that Ukraine should be used as a battleground for a such standoff with Russia, which is what the international community, in the sense of what the US has talked about and the UK has talked about. This is our chance now to bog down and have a go at Russia. And I can understand how people might say, well, it serves them right, so what? It's not about them. It's about at what cost that is going to be done, at the decimation even more than it already is of Ukraine, because this conflict is only going one way. It's escalating. It's escalating massively. And all of the weaponry that the West is pumping in is not going to alter that balance. It may ensure that the war is balanced enough and long enough to go on for years. That's not desirable. And that's the method that has been chosen to deal with the conflict so far. So if you like, your strategy hasn't worked. What's wrong with giving peace a chance? And that does mean the international community getting together and sort of saying enough.
Claire, maybe I'm being naive, as you suggest, but it would seem to me from a military perspective that if you start on peace talks and everybody stops the hostilities for the moment, the people who are on the run at the moment in those occupied areas are the Russians. They would welcome a sus kuga. They would like a ceasefire at the moment so they can regroup.
Well, I think that, I mean, I don't know if this is sort of implying that I'm sort of some sort of a secret Russian agent. I put forward a call for peace from the very, very beginning, that sanctions don't work and throwing arms into a conflict only serve to further that conflict. That has actually been the outcome of this situation. If you like, I've been vindicated in that. Nobody is on the run on this. Russia is regrouping now, sadly, and escalating, and it's going to go in deeper and harder. And I don't want that. I don't want this conflict continuing. I don't want the suffering continuing. But that's the only direction in which this is going. And there have been some recent setbacks in Russia. It's been openly discussed in the Russian media and so on. But their response to that isn't, oh, we better go now. It's let's go in and let's go in harder. And that's utterly frightening when you're dealing with a country that has a nuclear arsenal behind it. And I think it's lunacy for us to take that lightly and to allow that situation to continue to escalate. There needs to be a cessation of hostilities to get to that. Obviously, there needs to be a bit of confidence building, reduction of tensions behind the scenes and all the diplomatic channels that are normally used to get to a ceasefire where there can be dialogue. And dialogue means an agreement. It doesn't mean Ukraine rolling over. It means an agreement that Ukraine can live with. If Ukraine isn't happy with it, then it won't be an agreement and they can go back fighting then if they want. But my God, isn't it worth a chance? Because the road we're on now is only the road to horror.
Claire Daly, MEP, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.